And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, reffing hell. Men denied a win. Craig, awesome. Women miss out on the Champions League final as Emma explodes. Thiago Silva, the gold standard of defenders, says goodbye. And the Chelsea team that's a win away from the title. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. And we are back with our Monday show. For a while there, it was looking like it was going to be all doom and gloom. In the end, it's just some doom and gloom, but we'll find some levity in there as well, as we always do. It's me, Matt, and I'm joined by The Athletic's two Chelsea experts. Hello, Simon Johnson.
Hello. I just want to say that when I make my leaving statement, we could do a recording video, apart from the world celebrations that will take place at The Athletic. I just want to make it as heartfelt as Thiago Silva.
And in Portuguese, if you could, would be a nice touch.
Well, I'll brush up especially.
Liam Toomey's back with this too. Okay, Liam, you dried your eyes after watching that Thiago video?
Yeah, it was totes emosh, wasn't it? big, big moment.
Yeah, it was. It caught me, I have to say. Will that affect our premature adjudications? Well, let's find out now. Liam, what have you got for me?
I think Thiago Silva will, at some stage, coach some of Chelsea's academy boys.
That's a cheeky one, because two of them are his sons in the academy, listener, if you didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't say he'd do it at Cobham. He might do it in his garden.
He might do it at home. Mine for this week is that Mykhailo Mudryk will be the darling of the Strasbourg faithful during his four-year loan spell starting from next season. Simon, do you have one that could top that?
No. Maybe I'll be the darling of the Strasbourg press box. Maybe that's mine.
It's a piece waiting to be written, and I'm sure Dom's commissioning it as he listens to this now. Right, later, Jesse Parker-Humphreys is going to join us to discuss a sad farewell for Emma Hayes at Stamford Bridge. But first, speaking of which, Thiago Silva will leave Chelsea at the end of this season. It was announced in a video posted by the club on Monday morning. He joined on a free transfer from PSG in 2020. He's played 151 times for the Blues, winning three trophies, including, of course, the Champions League. He said his love for the club is indescribable. Chelsea means a lot to me. I came here with the intention of staying for 1 year and it ended up being four. It's already hard saying goodbye in the most normal of circumstances, but when there is a mutual love, it's even harder. He did hint that there might be a future role at the club for him. We've had some tweets on it. Curtis says, massive shout out to Thiago Silva, who was one of our finest transfer business and has been immense over the last 4 years. Thank you, legend. Trash account. Actually, heartbreaking news this morning. We'd be lost without him at times in defence this season. Needs to be part of the backroom staff or similar. And Elton says, what a player and what a person to have leading the back line for the last 4 years. Forever in our hearts. Simon, when he came, we were quite quickly saying, oh, isn't it a shame that we didn't get him a bit earlier and get to see a bit more of him? But I think now we can just say, well, how lucky were we to actually watch him at all? Because there are times where he made his job look laughably easy.
Yeah, and I remember sort of watching the game. Obviously, I was at Villa Park on Saturday. I remember this one incident where it sort of summed him up, really. He timed an interception perfectly, then stepped out and then sprayed a perfect 20, 25-yard pass to a teammate. I think it might have been Nicholas Jackson. And it just oozed class and someone that's played at the very highest level, which takes me back to the very first time I saw him in the flesh, which was behind closed doors against Crystal Palace, I think it was. And I remember thinking, there's a guy that's played at the very highest level. You can tell he's on a different planet to the rest of the Chelsea players. So remarkable bit of business, incredibly hard person and player for Chelsea to replace. I think the video says it all about how much he cared for the club. Certainly, perhaps my belated premature adjudication is, maybe some other ex-players will be busy editing the ones that they did and trying to make a better fist of it, because Thiago Silva's, I think the response that he's got to that video says it all, because he was speaking from the heart. And but we've known that this has been coming for months. We've known that Chelsea are going to move on, that, and also that he wants to move on, that he wants one more season, possibly back in Brazil. But the fact he's left the door ajar to coming back, working for the club, just says just how much this relationship has formed. I mean, it's extraordinary. You would sort of think his heart would belong to probably all clubs, maybe AC Milan, or certainly, he obviously had quite a bond with PSG, although that went a bit sour by the end. But for him to sort of feel this emotional connection to London, to Chelsea, I think it just shows what a great sort of signing that was for both parties.
And it's a reciprocal relationship, right, Liam? He is beloved by Chelsea supporters. He's the one player who's had his name chanted consistently throughout the season. And you can see how sort of grateful people are, as we say, to have got to see him play in that effortless way that he would just take the ball off somebody and then, as Simon says, ping it 40, 50 yards across the pitch without even thinking. A really graceful and elegant footballer, which are not usually words you'd use to describe a defender.
Yeah, and I think part of the connection that's been built up over the past 4 years is that, well, certainly now, but it's been the case for a while, he's one of the few remaining links at Chelsea to the time when Chelsea were a really elite club. I mean, it's not that long ago, but so much has changed that he's one of the few people left who's now leaving who has genuine elite pedigree and experience. I think that will underpin the sadness of the goodbye with a bit of an unsettled feeling among many of the supporters, because the defenders that Chelsea currently have to replace him are obviously at a very different stage of their own careers. They may well go on to be world-class defenders in their own right, although they'll do very well to be as good for as long as Silva was. But they've got it all to prove. He had very little to prove when he arrived at Chelsea. And I think we need to stress at this point how completely unprecedented what he's done is in the Premier League, never mind Chelsea. He made his Premier League debut for Chelsea at 36. John Terry was done at 34 at Chelsea. I think the only high-profile defender you can compare who arrived in England as late in his career as Silva did is Laurent Blanc at Manchester United. And that was a very different era of Premier League football. And it didn't go so well for him. So for Silva to come to England deep in his mid-30s and be a starter more often than not in the fastest, most competitive league in the world for 4 years is an astonishing achievement. And, you've seen finally injuries have started to get the better of him, but he's been remarkably robust, all things considered. And it has been a bit of a roller coaster. He hasn't always been part of great Chelsea defences, certainly not this season. And he's had his share of individual mistakes. And as he's got older, I think that, it's become a standing joke that I've been trying to retire him for 6 months, Matt, because the defensive structure has been adapted around him to factor in his limitations at this stage of his career, but his strengths remain considerable. And I think it's certainly been a pleasure to cover him as a journalist and watch him up close on the pitch. And I think, you're seeing from the outpouring of emotion from supporters that many of them have considered it a privilege too.
Yeah, I think one of my only regrets is that we didn't really get to know the man, because he doesn't really speak English and we rarely get to speak to players that often these days anyway. But that was probably the only thing missing from his, not missing from his life, but from our perception of him. And maybe that's played a part in why outside of Chelsea, I think he's gone kind of under the radar for just how good he's been, consistently good. He rarely gets much coverage, much praise outside of Chelsea, and yet I would argue he's been one of the best centre-halves in the Premier League in the 4 years he's been there. And again, going back to Saturday, he's played next to Badishield before and it's not gone so well. But I do wonder, given the Badishield's problems and struggles for form, whether there's any coincidence that he shows some form of form with Silva next to him, that sort of wise old head. And Silva, as Madueke told the Chelsea app, was one of two people to give some strong words, strong message at halftime when Chelsea were 2-0 down. One of them was Pochettino. The other was Thiago Silva. And I just wonder...
Thought you were going to say the other one was Bell.
Well, yeah, that's possibly. I just wonder whether Thiago Silva does remotely, and what he's done at Chelsea, does remotely send some kind of message to the ownership about what an experienced player can do, even if it's just a free agent. There are players out there that can come in, you don't have to spend a fortune on, and they can have a massive contribution. So I feel it's unlikely, but it is perhaps a little reminder that he can make some smart acquisitions with older players and they can be a great assistance to a young squad.
Sign him up for 8 more years. All right, that's Thiago Silva. Let's get on to Saturday's game next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Gallagher! That is superb! Wonderful goal! And Chelsea have an equaliser! And Villa Park is collectively stunned! Badiashile with the ball in! They've won it! Right at the end! It's De Sassi! It's been rolled out and Chelsea are denied. It's a reprieve for Aston Villa.
Aston Villa 2, Chelsea 2, then the Blues producing a spirited comeback only to be denied by dunderheaded officials. And Maurizio Pochettino, speaking after the game to TNT Sports in the UK, said, "I don't want to talk bad about the referee, but it's unbelievable. It's ridiculous. It's difficult to accept this type of thing. In the semi-final, I was humble and the VAR said no penalty. In this situation, it's really painful as it has damaged English football, the image." Let's start with the end of the game then, Simon. You were on hand at Villa Park for this one. You don't really get to know much in the stadium, do you, as to what's going on with VAR? But what was your take on the decision to disallow the Axel Disasi 95th minute goal / own goal, maybe, from Robin Olsen? It certainly didn't sit well with Pochettino.
No, but then it wouldn't, would it? Because it's the second time in as many weekends that a decision has gone against him. Of course, the week before at Wembley, VAR wasn't used or certainly didn't seem to have much of an impact on Michael Oliver going to see the monitor for Jack Grealish's handball. On this occasion, Craig Pawson clearly saw what transpired, but VAR told him to look at the monitor and again it went against Chelsea. The actual incident itself happened pretty much in front of me because the press box at Villa Park is weirdly at a... Normally you're in the middle of the pitch, sort of around the halfway line. At Villa Park, you're kind of more in the corner and that was the corner that Chelsea scored. You could see that Badiashile put a nudge in on Diego Carlos. I thought Diego Carlos was very weak. If that was a Chelsea centre-back at the other end, you'd be very disappointed with that kind of defending, although we have seen it, haven't we? And but then probably if that was at the other end and the goal was given, Chelsea would be outraged for that. So I always flip it round and go, yeah, if it's at the other end, Pochettino would be moaning as well if it was given. So and so with the Chelsea supporters. Was it a foul? You could argue yes, but it was very soft. And yeah, once it was reviewed, you always knew it was going to be disallowed. But Badiashile, yeah, he did sort of nudge him. But like I said, Carlos was incredibly weak there. So I tweeted soft margarine when the decision was given.
Don't have a problem with the goal being disallowed. I think it was justifiable based on Badiashile's push. But the point that several people have raised that I do agree with is that VAR shouldn't be re-refereeing situations like this. Craig Pawson had a clear view. He wasn't missing any information. He actually had the best angle of the incident as well. And he made a subjective call, which is basically all referees ever do. In like 80, 90% of the cases, when there isn't an objective truth, they make a subjective judgment call. They interpret the rules according to their own view of the game, essentially. And so what you had was the subjective call of an on-field official overruled by the subjective call of a VAR. And that's not the way VAR should work, because I don't think it was clear and obvious either way. I think you could justify a decision either way. And if that's the case, the on-field decision should stand. So I think that's where the frustration from a Chelsea perspective should come from. Not necessarily that the decision arrived that was inherently wrong, but just that it was another process that reflected badly on the shambles that is VAR.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. But you just sort of go, well, Craig Pawson, if you saw it live and didn't think it was a foul, then why are you then being convinced to change your mind when looking at the monitor? It just feels like you bow to that pressure. Being asked to go to the monitor should not mean you change your mind. It should mean you get another look at it to assess your original thought and you can stay with your original decision. It just seems that the whole monitor thing is just also been lost. You rarely see these days a referee actually standing by their decision.
It's like scripted theatre, Simon, isn't it? Like everyone knows what's going to happen as he runs over. It's just to build suspense.
Yeah, well, I wish there was suspense because you sort of go, yes, we all know what's going to happen now. VAR has become a very tiresome subject to talk about, but I certainly think that it's done Chelsea no favours in recent weeks. And on these little things, can a manager's fate turn, right? Because Chelsea could be in the FA Cup final and could be a lot closer to being in a top seven finish. And instead, Pochettino is not in a cup final, and the task of finishing in the top seven has made that a little bit harder.
Let's get VAR in the bin and move to Sweden. Straight out of Stockholm coming for you next season, potentially. So that was one talking point after the game. It was not one which Mark Cucurella was commenting on in this clip, which you will hear now. He spoke to Simon in the Mix Zone more about Chelsea's performance. Let's hear a bit of it.
We don't have excuses. I think we play very bad against against Arsenal, the attitude is not the correct. And today, the first half, we don't understand good the game and we suffer a little bit. But we show that we have the quality and we have the spirit to play, to fight together. And we need to stay in this way because we are a young team. It's not an excuse because we show today that we have the quality and we play against the fourth in the league and we dominate all the game. But we need to keep this level every minute, every game. Yeah. Every action, because if we stay in this way, I think we can do a lot of good things.
Do you think you've proved something to yourselves as well? Because at 2-0 down, you perhaps may have been thinking, oh no, here we go again from Arsenal. But you came back in the second half. You also showed you can do it.
Yeah, for sure. I think the attitude of the team in the second half is very good because we came from a difficult game and we start back again today. But I think the team show like his personality, his confidence. We play together, we fight together, and I think it's the way we need to play every game, every minute, because the quality is there, but we need to be conscious, like if we don't play and we don't fight together, it's difficult because it's one of the best leagues in the world, and I think we need to watch I think the game again. We need to find the good things and stay in this way. We have 5 games to end of the season. I think we can do a lot of good things, finishing in a good way and keep going.
We have 5 games to go. We can do a lot of good things. Let's hope so. Never heard Kukurea's voice before, so there's a box ticks for me and maybe you too, listener. So, Simon, we got a bit of an adjustment here from Maurizio Pochettino, which was necessary, of course, after what we'd seen at Arsenal. And this was a totally different performance, wasn't it? Other than conceding in the 4th minute, which is becoming the standard, I suppose. But the response thereafter, it was all Chelsea. And at first you're thinking, well, this is how Villa want the game to go. Let Chelsea have the ball and then hit them on the counter-attack. But it quickly became apparent that it was actually just Chelsea stamping their own authority on the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I did get flashbacks to Arsenal in the sense of Chelsea responded quite well in the first half of that game as well and hit the post. And of course, Nicholas Jackson hit the post. But overall, Chelsea did have a stranglehold of the game, but just conceded 2 goals. Even the second goal just came out of nothing.
Your old pal, Morgan Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah, quiz question, I think, if I'd. And the atmosphere in Villa Park was tense. It was weird. I was in the press box sort of telling everyone, I was going, what are you all worried about? You know, this is, I was fully expecting Chelsea to potentially have another Arsenal. But Pochettino tweaked it at halftime. He brought sort of a Cucurella into the middle, did a bit of a Guardiola and moved Mudryk into more of a left wing back role. Not that Mudryk really had much a contribution of a positive kind, but Cucurella did. And then Medwecki was causing quite a few problems down the right flank. And there was that sort of sense in the stadium that if Chelsea get a goal here, the mood changes even more. And that certainly was the case. And in the end, the 2-2 draw was the very least Chelsea deserved. Really, they were the better team for long, long periods. And tight offside goal in the first half. We all knew that was another sort of scripted drama, you could sort of say, Liam, was that Nicholas Jackson finally takes a chance in clinical fashion and it's not given. He was just, I didn't even need to see any lines. I just went, it's Nicholas Jackson. This is going to fit perfectly into his own personal drama that he finally takes a chance and it'll be ruled out. And so
the Timo Werner special.
Yes.
Was it one of those, Liam, where the pressure was off because he just thought he was offside? Because he sort of celebrated in a way that could at best be described as half-hearted, didn't he? He was like, I mean, I'll put my hand up a bit and maybe that'll convince the lino, but actually it was a lot closer than it first appeared.
I think this is the big problem that football has to address now, is that we've completely shattered strikers' confidence in celebrating goals. Never mind their confidence in finishing. They don't even have the confidence to wheel away half the time these days, and it's a travesty for the game. I don't know, I just think Jackson's finishing is very erratic, and you kind of flip a coin when he's running through on goal, and half the time he could finish really, really convincingly, and the other half he could, you know, hit the goalkeeper or trip over his own feet. You don't really know, but I say that all with fondness because I do like him as a player.
We'll come back to a couple more of the individuals, but here's a tweet that comes to us from Alan. It touches a little bit on what you were talking about earlier, Simon, with Thiago Silva. Alan says, whatever Poch said at halftime today, he should keep that up. I mean, this was a marked contrast again to Arsenal, but also to other games we've seen this season where Chelsea look okay in the first half and then totally fold in the second. This was quite the opposite.
Yeah, it was refreshing. And it was like, oh, so you can turn up. Yeah, and in fairness, Cucurella also said in post-match how Pochettino spoke well at half-time. So mark it down as, one of his successful team talks. But no, I mean, it was basically more of the same. Like I said, they dominated most of the first half as well. I mean it still shocked me when I saw the possession stats and it was over 70%. And you're sort of going, I know Aston Villa sort of played into this sort of rope-a-dope and hoping to hit Chelsea on the counter, because Villa, in fairness, in the few attacks they had, always looked like they could score because Chelsea are just so poor at the back. But in a way, there's a reason for that. I mean, it was another change to the back four. This time you had Trevor Chalobah playing at right back. No wonder there is no sort of unity there. But we should also, I think, highlight Moises Caicedo's performance. Once again, it's becoming a little bit of a talking point. Of course, it emerged after the Everton victory, that the significance of him not playing next to Enzo Fernandez. And here was another really strong performance from him with Enzo Fernandez on the operating table, although I think his operation was over by then. But yeah, it was good. And one of the loudest roars of the night was when he won a 50-50 in the second half in front of the away end. It was very, very loud. The greeting that tackle was given, and it was just like, oh, he may have helped his popularity rise a little bit with that. Just that one challenge.
On that, Chris said Caicedo was excellent against Villa. One of two games for Chelsea where he's really impressed me, the other being against Everton. On both occasions, he hasn't had Enzo alongside him. Can't quite figure out why this is making a difference, but it clearly is. Do you prefer him with Gallagher rather than with Enzo, Liam, or do you think that the Enzo thing is a bit of a red herring?
I think it is a bit of a red herring, because I think if people cast their minds back to earlier in the season, there were games in which Enzo and Caicedo played well together. And the thing that I've been talking about constantly when it comes to this is the distance between them on the pitch. The further apart they are, the worse they both look. Because when Enzo's too high up the pitch, I don't think he impacts the game as much, because his single best skill is progressing the ball, finding incisive passes from the middle of the pitch and deeper positions. If he's receiving the ball with his back to goal, he doesn't get as many opportunities to do that. And it also means that when Chelsea lose the ball, and they lose the ball fairly frequently in Premier League matches, Caicedo is completely isolated. And it means he's got too much ground to cover. It means he commits too many fouls, picks up too many yellow cards. He gets bypassed too easily. And the back four is exposed. And it means that Enzo is even more of a passenger out of possession than he needs to be. You know, I don't think he's a super talented defensive player, but if he was behind the ball when Chelsea lost it, he could at least mount some resistance. So I think it's a lot more about Chelsea's midfield balance and the way the team is set up than what it says about either player. I think when Pochettino doesn't have Enzo available, he sets up the midfield in a different way, and it's possible that maybe that midfield balance suits Caicedo a little bit more.
Before we move on from this game, Simon, let's talk about Noni Madueke, because he was the subject of your post-match piece for The Athletic. Obviously, he gets the goal here and then he gets in the ref's face at full time. And that last bit may be as significant to some Chelsea supporters, because he had some making up to do after what we saw at Wembley after the semi-final defeat against Manchester City.
Yeah, I just thought it was a very telling contrast, given all the stick that he'd taken over the previous 7 days about being seen to be laughing and joking on the Wembley pitch immediately after the final whistle, Thiago Silva in tears. And here we had the complete contrast of Madueke approaching Craig Pawson, having a go at him, getting the inevitable booking because of that disallowed goal. And it obviously showed someone that did care about what had just happened. And he is a player that seems to divide opinion, but is he the finished article? No. Is there a lot to improve on? Yes. Particularly defensively, he does need to sort of help protect the fullbacks more than he does. But one of the reasons Chelsea turned that game around was because of Noni Madueke, and he did have a good game on the right hand side, and he was ready to try things, make runs, take Lucas Digne on. I asked Cucurella about Madueke, and he defended him in terms of that Wembley incident, and talked about how much he does care and is a player that they all rate. But I do think that in the middle of everyone being very frustrated with Chelsea's lack of consistency and disappointing results and so on, that it does feel like you have to avoid this danger, I think, in making people feel even less confident than they already are. And I do sort of wonder if fans could actually, I've said this before on the pod, can actually play more of a role in getting behind some of these guys rather than just criticising them 24/7 and saying they're not good enough.
The single most impressive thing Madueke did, I think, is he finally found a way to take a penalty off Cole Palmer, because Conor Gallagher was winning a penalty for that foul on by John McGinn.
But would it have been given, though?
You can't take a penalty if someone side-foots the ball into the bottom corner as the whistle's on its way up to your lips. So, well done, Madueke.
It was a nice finish as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Connor's now got two of the best GIF reactions in the same season at Villa Park, from the Enzo free kick and then from the appealing for a penalty while he's on the floor to looking around and see, oh, that's fine, the ball's in the net. Don't worry about the penalty.
And quickly on Connor, we cannot sort of not mention what a superb goal that he scored. I mean,
with his wrong foot.
With his wrong foot, bent into, and good celebration. He felt a bit, and he instantly turned to the away end as well and gave it the old fist bump and showed that he cares and stuff. Because, again, the backstory to this game was the day before Pochettino, in his pre-match press conference, I'd asked him about how the players needed to prove that they still deserve to be a part of things next season. And he basically said, yeah, that's right. He said, it shouldn't just be me. You know, 3 weeks, there's games to go. Don't be thinking of holidays and international duty. So it felt like a suitable response. Pochettino also then proceeded in the daily section to sort of essentially start pointing fingers elsewhere at the club. It really felt like a, if I'm going down, you're going down with me kind of moment, which was good. I actually quite liked it. I thought, fair play to him. You know, he all season, he's the one that's had to carry the can for Chelsea's failings on and off the pitch. And I think he's had enough of basically being the fall guy and sort of saying, hang on a minute, it's not just me. There are other people that should also be answering some awkward questions.
Let's see if they do at any point between now and the end of the season. Well, Maurizio Pochettino could go a long way to winning over some of his doubters by doing the double over his old club Tottenham, and that's who Chelsea play on Thursday. Yes, Thursday of this week. For some reason, Brent says, I'm wondering whether Liam and Simon think Poch will stick with this new formation, or was it a Villa-specific adjustment? We know, Liam, that Spurs aren't going to change how they approach this game. Do you think that Mauricio Pochettino will have something different in mind for Spurs, or is he keeping with the way that they played on Saturday, and therefore that will mean it will be Gallagher alongside Caicedo again?
I think he'll pick the 11 best players who are fit.
He'll pick the 11.
Which is what he's done. Which is what he's done for most of this season. And then try and find the formation that makes the most sense with those guys. But it was an interesting little tweak, playing Cucurella as an inverted fullback. I don't think Pochettino's keen to take much from Pep Guardiola. I've never got the impression that he's his biggest fan. But it is definitely a growing trend in football, and it does help teams build possession and also be a little bit more solid defending counter-attacks. It basically gives the team a similar structure to what they had under Tuchel, with a deep lying two and then three behind. That's a reasonably solid base. And given that Cucurella doesn't, I know he's done a couple of things in recent weeks going forward. You know, he's got a goal, he's got one assist, but he's not some massive underlapping threat generally. He might be better served to be just sort of parked in front of the defensive line when Chelsea are building the play.
It's an interesting time for this game to happen, isn't it, Simon? We've spoken in recent weeks about Pochettino needing a couple of good results from the last few games to convince everybody that he's the man to continue next season. Again, he can point to his injury list with some validity, but this is a Spurs side who've only won once away from home in 2024 against a Chelsea team who've only been beaten once at home since October. There could be something there for Chelsea. Even as I say that, my brain goes, come on, Matt, you've been saying this for about 30 weeks of this season. Please stop. But do you get my point? Maybe Chelsea won't lose.
No, I mean, we don't know. We don't. No one knows what Chelsea are going to turn up anymore, do we? I would expect and I would hope Chelsea to turn up for this one. Pochettino needs his players to turn up for this one, because if we're saying that he faced a struggle to win back the fans after Arsenal, lose at home to Tottenham, you might as well start, you know, packing your bags, you know. Do not go past go, go directly to jail. Monopoly reference. Yeah, do not collect your £200 even. Because there's only one manager since it was 1990, I think it was, that has lost to Tottenham at home. He doesn't want to become the second, especially with it being his former club. I think Pochettino he'll be fired up for it. Of course, this will also bring back memories of, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of talk in the build-up of, about the Stamford Bridge, 2016, Pochettino in the opposition dugout, going for the title, Eden Hazard saving football by scoring the equaliser to give the title to Leicester City. So I'd be very surprised if Chelsea don't fall for this one, because the fans are going to be very, very loud. And if it does start going wrong, it's going to get a little bit lively for the wrong reasons.
7:30 kickoff on Thursday is the hottest ticket in town. It means that we will be recording our next show on Friday so we can react to the game. Next today, we're going to turn our attention to the women's team.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's Barcelona again in the Champions League final.
Oh man, what a shame. No fairy tale end in the Champions League for Emma Hayes and Chelsea. The Blues lost 2-0 to Barcelona at a sold out Stamford Bridge on Saturday. Liam was there, I was there, so was our friend Jesse Parker Humphreys, who joins us now. Jesse, you okay? You had time to deal with it?
My anger has faded into sadness, and it's worse. The sadness is worse. I preferred it when I was angry.
We'll get to the refereeing. Here's Michael Cox, though, of The Athletic, who tweeted, "Over the two legs, Chelsea set up excellently and almost completely nullified Barcelona, who never really had a good spell of pressure despite all their possession. Missed chances and decisions went against them, but tactically, Chelsea were faultless." Would you concur with Michael there, Jesse?
It always feels nice when Michael says something like that, because you're like, yes, it's like a seal of approval of being good, I think. But yeah, I think he was right. I think that was what was so frustrating with the sending off, is it felt like we were sort of robbed of that, or Emma Hayes called it the opportunity to lose. And I think both games up until that point were really, really intriguing in terms of how each team tried to nullify the other. And I think as soon as Mauro Ramirez wasn't in the squad, I thought Chelsea were going to struggle to do what they did in the away leg in Barcelona, because they just didn't have that kind of hold-up player. But I think regardless, they adapted very well. I wasn't sure about the Lauren James-Cat Macario combo, but thought they did well in terms of trying to pull Barcelona across to one side of the pitch and then use those quick switches of play. And there are a couple of opportunities which came from that, not least when Šukanović can hit the post just before that red card. And yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just totally Chelsea-pilled, but I'm on straight out of Cobham, so I can be here. But I thought Barcelona were really disappointing in both games, to be honest. And I think that's testament to how much Hayes has learnt from playing them over the past couple of years.
Liam, we lauded Emma Hayes with praise for a tactical setup in the first leg. And as Jesse alludes to there, she got it right again here, didn't she? Because there were flashes of Barcelona's quality, but no real sustained period where you thought that they truly had Chelsea worked out.
Yeah, it was only really when Bonmatí got the ball that the ripples of anxiety went through the stands at Stamford Bridge. I was in the shed upper rather than the press box watching this one. Usually that's where the away fans sit. It was kind of a mixed section, I would say, this time around, because Barca had the lower tier, but they also had quite a few fans around me and a few pockets in the East End as well, from what I could see. But yeah, it did feel like Chelsea had the measure of them. Maybe not quite to the extent that they did at Stamford Bridge. And it felt like the spells of Barca possession were more sustained in this game. But it wasn't exactly a cascade of chances. And I think it was, you know, a piece of individual brilliance from Bonmatí for the first goal, coupled with a massive slice of luck with that deflection. I can understand Emma Hayes' frustration with the referee, because it did feel at times maybe this was just the Chelsea fans around me bleeding into my assessment of the game. But it did kind of feel like Bonmatí was refereeing the game, because she basically directed the referee to give Kadisha Buchanan her first booking. And then obviously was I think it was a penalty just about. But I think she definitely used all her experience to create that situation, which ultimately decided the game.
So Phil tweeted us to ask, will there ever be a time that Barca won't cheat against Chelsea? This is what had got Emma Hayes so riled up. She said on the second yellow card for Kadisha Buchanan, I think I was surprised when I saw her. That's the referee Dumitrescu selected. She's known for easy cards. That was probably the worst decision in UEFA Champions League history. It was pleasing that she got the branding right. Was the point right too, Jesse?
I haven't gone through every bad refereeing decision. And when it comes to the women's game in particular, the list tends to be very, very long. But yeah, I don't think it was a second yellow at all. I agree with Liam. I think it was a penalty. That's my rational take on it. But I think it's just particularly frustrating because Aitana came out after the first leg and did her whole, you know, crying about how Chelsea were dirty and they were time wasting and the referee didn't do enough about it. And then you get an entirely predictable, I think, refereeing performance off the back of comments like that. And, you know, there was a lot of sort of holier than thou Barca people going on about how, you know, Barca would never do the time wasting or the diving or anything. My personal favourite, I don't know if people have seen this video, I obviously didn't figure it out live, but Irene Paredes got a free kick from Shukunuskan, whereby nowhere, so much space between the two, and Irene Paredes sort of throws herself to the floor after she mishit a pass. And yeah, obviously I think all of that stuff was just very frustrating, and my main disappointment is no one did the Didier Drogba moment. I think we needed Sam Kerr on the pitch for that one to happen.
Yeah, we sort of needed to take some of those chances as well too.
Well, my interpretation of Barcelona's attitude to the second game, in which, as Jesse says, they adopted a lot of the strategies that Chelsea deployed in the first leg in Spain, was that it was a ultimate mark of respect. I think you know that the best team in the world is worried about you when they have to resort to anything and everything. I think it was a tie where both teams were under no illusions that the finest of margins would settle it, whether it be, you know, bits of luck with deflections or bounces of the ball or refereeing decisions. little bits of street wisdom here and there. And I think the fact that that Barcelona adopted that as well as Chelsea, I think shows that they were very, very aware, if not before the first game, then certainly before this one, just how dangerous Chelsea were.
Couple of tweets to run through. Simon, I want to put this one to you. Sam says, with all the money spent at Chelsea, is it a failure of Hayes to never win the Champions League and to only get to the final once? My initial reaction is that's a little bit harsh. What do you think?
Failures, yeah, I agree. It's a bit of a strong word. It's definitely a disappointment. And I think it's definitely, no matter how Emma Hayes may talk about it, it's definitely a disappointment for her. I mean, I remember asking her about the Holy Grail of the Champions League early in the season and how important it was to her, how much it was the thing driving her to keep going as Chelsea head coach. Because when you've won everything domestically, you need something, apart from winning it again, you need something to motivate you to get out of bed, to keep going, to keep doing it again and again and again. And I think the Champions League was clearly that thing that was driving her. But she was quite snappy in her reply to me, I remember. She was talking about how at Arsenal she got a medal as an assistant coach and she's quite happy with that. And I didn't believe her, quite frankly, because I think when you're just part of a coaching staff, yeah, of course it's an achievement, but it's not yours. It's not your baby. And Chelsea's very much her baby. And she's knocked on the door a number of times and come up short. And I think you only had to see the look on her face. And even the post-match comments, I think, to sort of see how much this stung. I remember as well another press conference I attended with her, which was after the semi-final defeat of last year to Barcelona. And of course, that the second leg of that game was the heroic 1-1 draw in the Camp Nou. And she was talking off the record, sort of saying, oh, if only the players had played with that kind of belief in the home game. And I wish we could play them again tomorrow. I think we could do so much better. For me, it just highlights just how much this competition, winning it as Chelsea head coach, meant to her. And this is her last crack at it. She's come up short. But her big triumph, she might argue, out of all of this, was the sold-out Stamford Bridge, essentially. Like that, how her sort of remarkable job is, her parting gift is to have essentially left this team as now a respected team that fans want to go and watch in Chelsea's traditional stadium. But she did say in the pre-match press conference, by the way, it's all very well getting that attendance for this. She wants that attendance for the first game next season. So let's see if people come back again.
That is the point, I think. And it's not a point that I made explicitly in my colour piece from the stadium, but selling out Stamford Bridge 5 years on from getting 4,000 people to the stadium the first time they played there as Chelsea ladies, I think just shows the remarkable rise in popularity of the women's game generally. But, you know, Chelsea have been a key factor in that. Chelsea women is the house that Emma Hayes built. So I'm not sure she would use that as the definition of her success because of everything Simon said. I think this failure to get over the line in the Champions League will eat at her, whatever she says publicly, because they were so close to getting past Barcelona. But it's a pretty remarkable achievement to sell out Stamford Bridge on the same day the Chelsea men's team are in action as well. And I spoke to one fan outside the stadium, actually. I didn't end up using this quote for the piece, but she's been a season ticket holder for the men's team for 20 years and has been watching the women's team more and more over the last five, including whenever they play at Stamford Bridge. And she was like, they should just build a new stadium for the men and make Stamford Bridge the Chelsea women's home. If you're listening, Todd and Badad, food for thought.
Yeah, it was a really, I just went to watch the game. It was a really fun experience and a totally different atmosphere to what you get at a men's game. And the guy on the PA had certainly had three Weetabix for breakfast because he was giving it both barrels. Pete says, striking seeing the similarity between Chelsea women and Klopp's Liverpool. Both announced they were leaving when they were still in four competitions, both bowing out of three or four of them fairly surprisingly. Clearly, the announcement wasn't helpful at all. I guess you spin that either way, depending on how the team does. They've got to dust themselves off quickly, Jesse, though, right? Because they've got this WSL game at Liverpool on Wednesday, and Man City brushed aside Bristol City to mean they're 6 points clear. They played twice more, but their goal difference is 7 better. So it might not just be about winning at Liverpool. Got to win well as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it's hard for the team to get up and go, because I think, you know, the Champions League kind of was the thing they really wanted. I think seeing the Barcelona performances, for me at least, put the FA Cup game against Manchester United in perspective. I think it just made me realise sort of how focused and detailed those game plans were for these games. And naturally, that takes away your focus from other things. But they won't have that now, which I do think will be a boost. I did feel like if they got to the Champions League final, it was probably going to be natural that they wouldn't put everything into the WSL games. And to a certain extent, I guess it can feel like it's in their hands. They'll have to outscore City, but obviously Bunny Shaw's now out for the rest of the season. Obviously, City still managed to get 4 against Bristol City, but it'll be interesting to see how many they score, or if they win against Arsenal, which is their game at the weekend and probably the last really, really big game. Quite funny that City of Arsenal, who will desperately want Chelsea not to win the league, and Chelsea of Manchester United, who will desperately not want City to win the league on the final day of the season. But yeah, I mean, I guess this is where we'll really see, like, maybe how much the Hayes stuff has affected the team, because I've certainly felt what's weird about the Klopp stuff at Liverpool is the wobble seems to have just got wobblier and wobblier as the season's gone on. Whereas with Chelsea, I don't think it's felt like that. I felt like it was almost a month ago or so, it felt like the team was like a bit stagnant. And again, I think these Barcelona performances will have re-energised them.
Mm. So it's Liverpool Wednesday, Bristol City at home on Sunday the 5th. That's sold out at King's Meadow, and then away to Spurs and Man United to finish. If you want more, Jesse, head over to The Athletic now for the column on whether Emma Hayes' season could end as a damp squib. Let's hope not. Jesse, you finished strongly. No damp squibs there. Thanks for your time as ever, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, a couple of wins this weekend as both the under-21s and the under-18s were victorious. The under-21s' final game of their regular season ended in a 2-0 win against Southampton at King's Meadow. Leo Castledine and Dujuan Richards got the goals. Simon, you were there for this one. A marked difference in the performance that we saw against Fulham in the PL Cup semi-final a week before.
Yeah, I mean, within a few minutes, the pressing, the intensity, it was just unrecognisable. Undoubtedly sent out with a bit of a tough team talk for Mark Robinson, I'd imagine.
He's a scary dude, right? If he gave you a tough team talk, you'd do what he said.
Yeah, and I think, rightly, I think there was a bemusement among everyone about just how they folded. Yes, there's been injury problems, but it was just far too easy for Fulham the week before. But no, this was good. It was interesting. Rami Alavia was there. Remember him? He was obviously an interesting spectator watching his present club against his former club. But Diego Moreira started the game and showed some nice flashes. Again, sort of remember him. His loan at Lille ended in January and has barely been seen since. But yeah, no, it was lots of promising signs. And Leo Castledine, who I've written about already, put in another good performance. I think he's had a really good season. And bizarrely, not been seen around the first team squad for quite a while. But I imagine he'll be on loan somewhere next season to continue his development.
Yeah. And a few of those boys who would have been involved on Friday night ended up getting the call up for the first team. So a bit of readjustment was needed last minute, making it even more impressive. Meanwhile, the under-18s just one win away from securing the title in PL South. They beat Leicester 3-2 at Cobham on Saturday. Danel McNeely got his 29th goal of the season. Shimi Mueka and Ato Ampa also got on the score sheet. It means Hassan Suleiman's side will be crowned champions if they beat Norwich at home on Saturday. You can watch that one live on the app with me if you like. Norwich, by the way, lost 9-0 to Arsenal on Saturday, and a young man called Martin Obi got 7 of the goals. So a decent day for him. And that's going to wrap up today's Straight Out of Cobham. Go to theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to sign up. If you aren't currently a subscriber, you can read Liam's colour piece from Saturday's Champions League semi-final, Simon's piece on Nonny Madueke and Aston Villa, Jesse on whether Emma Hayes' spell as Chelsea boss will end as a damp squib. Loads more great football content on there as well, at SO Cobham Pod. The place to go to find us on Twitter, currently known as X. And if you'd like to leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, we would appreciate it too. Back with you, remember, on Friday, so we can react to the win against Spurs. Until then, thanks to Liam, Simon, Jesse, and Lucy, and you for listening. Bye for now.
The Athletic.